Righto, we're just here at another Steaming Streamers podcast with long-time club member Gordon McBurney. House is either at work or on the couch, one of the two, but he might turn up a little bit later. Welcome to the show, Gordon.
Thanks, mate. Pleasure to be here.
No worries. We're just, as always, we just want to start with what brought you to the club, or what year you came here, or how did you find the Steamers?
Yeah, I came here in 85. To join Mars, or Uncle Ben's as it was then. Got talking to a guy called John Patterson, or Banjo, who was playing with the club.
Why'd they call him Banjo?
John Patterson.
I'm just clearing that up, mainly the Kiwis.
So I wandered down to training.
Where was training this? In 1985, where were we training?
It was on opposite the ground now. It was at Alexander Park.
So where the old tip was?
The old tip was, yeah.
Yep.
So we trained and played there.
So that's going to come full circle, because Tom Harrington's saying that that's getting developed and lights, and we're going to go back training there.
Well, hopefully this. At one stage on that ground, it was the old tip.
Yeah.
One of the players, I think it was one of the Waratahs guys, I think, broke his ankle on a Volkswagen steering wheel that came appeared up out of
as
the,
they do
out of the murk. So
I think wasn't you used to be able to get sepsis and stuff it was
horrible. Yeah. Pools of stagnant water and it was shocking.
So 85, were the Steamers also playing out at Blatchford sometimes, or
well, they weren't the Steamers then. It was the all the name Steamers came, I think, in 86.
Oh, okay. So what were they called in 85?
I think it was just the Albury Wodonga Rugby Union Football Club.
Oh, so we weren't branded as the Steamers.
No, I think there was a competition. I could be wrong. There was a competition.
Back yourself. You're right.
Yeah.
1986.
And
yep.
It's Linus Smith. They ran a competition for the club logo.
Were we blue and yellow?
Oh, yeah, it was blue and gold.
Always been blue and gold.
Blue and gold. So, but I think it was 86. That the Steamers were born, definitely by the time we won the 87 grand final.
Oh, no, it was the Albury Steamers.
We was the Albury Steamers.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, 85, and we're training at the old tip.
Yep.
Who's sponsoring us in 85? Who's the main sponsor?
It was, at that stage, it was the New Albury in 85.
So that's the Cactus Bar, was it?
Paddy's. It's now called something else. So
we've been through there a few times in different.
Yeah, so when I came in 85, we were still at the New Albury, and the following year, 86, it was back to the Star, and I think by the name of John Brockhouse. Was a sales manager of Swan Brewing.
Yeah.
And we got a joint sponsorship with the Star and with Swan Brewing, and they gave us as much product as we liked. So we'd load the buses up.
Perfect. Were they buses then, or were they horse? They weren't horse-drawn carriages or anything? They're just still buses?
Buses, yeah.
Okay.
No, you're thinking back in your day.
Yeah, getting back a little bit further. Yeah. I'll talk to Don Cameron.
Yeah. So we used to, when we took a went and away game, we loaded the bus up with beer, but we put a slab in the opposition change rooms for each of the grades.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a really good time in the club. Really
and
good
so
club.
you're an affirmed dirt tracker through your career, really, like second grade,
third grade. Yeah,
bit of first grade here and there?
Never ran on in first grade.
But on the bench
off
and
the
stuff.
Bench,
like,
backed up in the mid to late 80s.
So 87, so 85, 86, the club was, what sort of success was the club having?
Oh, the club, well, 85, I can't actually recall what the end result was in 85,
to be honest. Yeah, yeah.
But 86 was the start of a very good period.
What happened there?
Basically, the club's done pretty much what Tom Harrington did. It went to the AGM with a ticket.
Yes.
Tony Fountain was the club president. He was a
Hey, Andy.
Yeah. He was a very charismatic auctioneer.
Yeah.
And you had guys like John Wanklin, and just trying to think of his name, an ex-Wallaby. And he was a just trying to think.
No, that's all right. It'll come to you. Yeah, so we had a committee as a ticket in 86.
Very strong, very well balanced committee with a lot of good business heads there.
And they drove. What was their modus operandi?
Well, they came to the AGM with a ticket and with a 3-year plan to bring the cup into Albury. And they in 86 they. We made the grand final in first grade.
Who did we play?
Aggies.
That 86, so that would have been the end of the Aggies' good run.
So they beat us in the grand final.
They had some phenomenal players through those early 80s.
Yeah, they did. And in 87 we got up and beat the Tars.
And talk us through that game. We haven't. It's the people involved in that are few and far between. So were you on the bench or
playing second grade. So we had three grades. We had all three grades in the grand final.
You're kidding? Three grades?
Yeah.
Did we win the club championship? Were they doing them then?
I don't know.
Yeah. No. Okay.
But the third, I was looking at the third grade side today, and there were some bloody good, former first grade players in third grade. Former first grade players in second grade. So third grade won. We lost in second grade. We lost. We'd gone through the first round undefeated.
Yeah.
With a draw to.
So this is 1987.
87. Yeah. Yep. With a draw to the Air Force, and they beat us in the second round. And then in the grand final, we went down to, I can't remember the score,
They would have had, that big Tiny would have been playing for the Air Force, was he? Would have been about 6'7".
Yeah, there was a big, the thing was with the Air Force is they didn't have a first grade, so they only
fielded they the loaded grade. Up, yeah.
So
yeah.
They had, half the team were first
just grade. Just remind me, where was our home ground? Was our home ground Murrayfield at that point, or was it
it was still Alexander Park.
So we're training on a tip.
Yeah.
Training on an old tip, yep. Yeah. So third grade, so our first grade on 1987 won the grand final.
Yep.
How was that for you?
Oh, Bob? Mate, it was absolutely, over the moon.
Yeah. Who were some of the key players in that?
Oh, Don Cameron, Barrel in the
who's Barrel?
That Brian Adamson.
Yep.
Barry McNee was hooker. We had Big Mazzanti in the second row. I think Greg Barlow was playing.
Yeah.
Don't remember any of the backs.
No, backs are like yeah.
Dave McNaughton, I think, was But no, it was a very strong side.
Was that for you? Was that a bit like dancing with your sister to be playing a losing grand final and have two winning grand finals either side, or do you go, look, let's swallow?
Look, it was absolutely, we all know what it's like to lose a grand final. It was gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
An hour later, over the moon.
Yeah.
And even to first grade's
credits,
thanks. Going back to 86, they lost the grand final. When they came back to the pub, within an hour, the joint was bouncing.
It was just the
euphoria to say this. We thought this was a 3-year plan to bring the cup home, and here we are in the first year of it. We've lost, but what an outcome!
Mm.
And Brian's Adamson's father, Gil, was a short, bald Scotsman, a bit like my dad. And he, by, 10 o'clock at night, this joint's heaving. He says, what's it going to be like when you win?
I think that's a bit like 2014, where we weren't expected to make it.
Yeah.
It was a sort of a celebration.
Yeah,
So 1987, where did the club go from there? Or where did you go as a player? Like,
When I came to the club, to quote Rod Poxon, I came purporting to be a hooker.
You a hooker? Or?
Well, yes, I'd played about 7 or 8 games as a 13-year-old as a hooker.
Ah, yeah, no, that's lifetime experience.
Lifetime experience, and I played about 2 games on the wing at La Trobe Uni first year until I discovered diving. So I came to the club with very, very little experience.
Yeah.
And the two props, so I turned up to training, they said, yeah, you're in, because we were, you know, short. Yeah. And Rod Pogson and a guy called John Carr, or Fossil, who was about 40, at least 45 at the time.
So the 80s version of Troy Tatchell.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So so we walk out to the ground, and I turn around to the two props and said, where do I stand? And Fossil was upset, annoyed. And during the course of the game, the scrums were okay, but there was a rolling maul that the Tars had set up, and I had no idea of offside. So yeah. I came running into this maul that they'd set up, offside, ripped the ball, and the next thing there was boots and fists and elbows. And I finished up flat on my back on the ground, and the prop leaned over and stomped on my stomach.
Our prop or their prop?
Their prop, yeah. And during the course of the evening, and drinks afterwards, I was at the urinal with Billy O'Brien, and I looked down and peeing blood.
So it was
an interesting introduction to bush rugby, but
as a hooker in the mid-80s, and you're throwing into line-outs that, from your view, would look like a dog's breakfast. You would look up and you would just see heads and hands and some sort of lifting that was not legal. And where would you place throwing into a line out then into throwing into a line out now?
I don't know. I would be hopeless at throwing into a line out now.
their accuracy is something else.
It was actually Adamson that, because when I played in 85, I wasn't throwing in the line out. There was somebody else already, but there was a prop doing it. But by 87, that had changed. And it was Adamson that coached me initially in line out throws.
Yeah.
And it was a simple exercise of drawing 3 circles on a brick wall at 3 different heights, front, centre, and high, and throwing at it till it hit and it bounced and came pretty much back to you. That was what you were trying to achieve.
Yeah.
So the trouble was, when you go to training, the second rowers that are jumping say, no, higher, it's got to be higher than that. Yeah. And then when you get to the game and you're under...
Scrums in, they've got someone hanging on them.
You've got to, So it was good. It was... I thoroughly enjoyed the game. I loved the physicality of it.
Yeah.
And the camaraderie, you know.
Yeah. So you've got mates.
Yeah, mates for life.
So how long past 87 did you keep going?
I played through, coming down through the grades. I played the grade, So I played second grade up until about 93 or 4. Definitely 93.
That's 8 or 9 years of rugby.
Yep.
And how old do you reckon you were?
Well, I was...
94. How old were you?
94, I was 39.
Jesus, so you're getting on.
Yeah.
With all due respect.
Yep. So, and then... But I loved third grade. So
you started second grade in 85. You were 30 already.
I was 30, yeah.
Oh, 30 that year. So you've come in as a old head.
Well, they would think... Yeah, at 30 you were an old head. In fact, I was a newbie. So I played around about that time, La Trobe Uni came in as our third grade.
Yes.
So, and it was fantastic because it provided a platform. They originally came in with their own jerseys, I think in about 92, something.
Yeah, I think John McMillan said.
Yeah, so it was about 92. Yeah. And there was a bunch of older blokes, Dave, myself, Scotty Fraser, Paul Massara, all those guys. We were all playing in the third grade.
Yeah.
And then their better players went up and played second grade and so forth. And we played as a third grade side for quite a few years. And I was just trying to think, it was probably about 98, I think. We made the third grade grand final. We made it a couple of times. And by that stage, I was in a different role at work and I was travelling overseas 50%, 60% of the time. So I get a phone call from footy saying, hey, we've made the grand final. And I'm in Korea, I think. And I said, all right, instead of coming home Saturday, I'll come overnight, I'll take the red eye home.
Yeah.
And I'll fly direct from Sydney to Wagga. So can you go to my house, told him where the key was. My kit is all in the laundry sink. I was living on my own at that stage. My kit's all in the laundry sink.
Hasn't moved since last game.
I'll meet you in Wagga.
Perfect rugby kit.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I jump off the plane at Wagga, get the taxi, and the boys are warming up and waving to me. Your gear's in the shed, so I run into the shed, start stripping my stuff off. And when I'm in an aeroplane or when I'm travelling in silk boxes for breathing space. And I look down and there's me gear, but not the jocks. So I put these red silk boxes on, climb into me gear, run out, and the first scrum, the left agate drops out of the silk boxes. The second row, I said, oh, geez, I've got to put it up.
They're looked up getting hit in the head by a blowfly, and you're...
Yeah, it's at half-time, they send a runner over with a pair of grotty, wet jocks.
You don't want to know where they came from.
That they found in the change room somewhere, which I didn't wear. I've got standards.
How'd you go on that?
We won.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. I think we won two third grades.
Are those third grade grand finals? So you know the flag we run out with at the ground? The flag that the kids run out in front of first grade?
Yeah.
That lists our grand final victories on it.
Oh, does it? Yeah.
I don't think it lists the third grade ones.
Probably not.
Yeah. They should be on it. Should totally. There's a couple of juniors ones that need to go on it.
Yeah.
That's a project for the committee.
Yeah.
Or
the Historical Society.
Or the Historical Society. Oh, it's the club, you know, we've done it. Get it on there. So is that the end of your career?
No, I just was checking today because I met my now wife in 99.
A beautiful Trudy?
Trudy, yes. The long-suffering Trudy now.
Long-suffering Trudy.
20-odd years. So 99, I was still playing... for third grade, and I played a little in 2000, and I think that's when I pulled a pin. I played a game against the Phantoms on a Saturday. I played third grade, and then I was about to go to the shower, and Gordon was short in the tight five, and I played a second grade game and then jumped on a plane and flew to Japan the next day and I was...
Buggered.
Yeah. I said, that's it.
So you saw the transition of the Phantoms from the Greens to the Phantoms?
Yeah.
That was a phenomenal change, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great, yeah. They were such a fun side.
Yeah, well, you didn't remember them as the Greens when they were just losing everything.
Well, I don't actually.
That was about 85, 86.
Was it? Yeah.
Just then.
Yeah,
and then about 87, 88, they switched over.
Yeah.
And they just became something else altogether.
Yeah, they certainly, when I remember playing first, they were in their purple outfits.
The purple, the Skull Cave.
The Skull Cave. Yeah. The Skull Cave was great. And they kidnapped, that wasn't the Phantoms, it was the Tars, I think, kidnapped one of our managers, Shawnee Gorham, and dropped him off at the chaining to the bar at the Gerogery pub.
Oh, did they give him back?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, well. We'll talk to Shawnee one day.
Yeah.
There is
one other.
Yeah, sorry.
We went over in 2008. Myself and footy Paul Mazzara organised a trip over to Christchurch for the Golden Oldies 2008 festival. And when I got back, I got a phone call at the start of the season, saying, look, we're really short. So by this time, 2008, I'm 52.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I'm not.
Well, you get to wear golden shorts now,
yeah. Anyway, They rang me again on the Friday night when I was pissed, and I said yes. And I get up there, and the combined age of the front row was 153. So it was Don Cameron was 53, I was 52, and Terry Reardon was 48. And we had 2 17-year-olds in the second row, this in this third grade. And I reckon I'm right to say our combined age of 153 was more than the rest of the team put together. Yeah.
Terry O'Regan's got a great history as a player. Like yeah. He was vice captain to Nick Farr Jones in
really
the
was,
Sydney
yeah.
Uni teams. Okay, he wasn't a shabby player at all.
No, he was, and neither Don Cameron was.
Don Cameron's obviously got his Randwick heritage.
Yeah. And then you've got McPurkey with a second.
You were the glue, mate.
Glue, yeah.
So you've had, what's that, 95 to 99, what did you say?
No, to
more or less.
99, so yeah.
15, 16 years of playing with the club.
Yeah.
That's a big stint. You don't see that often.
I had 2 years off in the mid-90s, I don't know. 95 is when I separated, changed roles, all the rest of it. I had 95 and 6 off, I think.
So you've seen some big grand finals, 87,
yeah.
99, 2000.
Yep, 99,
yeah. That's a great sort of feather to have in your cap to see it, be part of it, be around the club at that time.
Club's fantastic and it's, you know, I remember reading somewhere that, you know, the bonds that are forged in the, you know.
Bonds forged in the heat of battle and bonds for life.
Yeah. And I wrote a poem about it. Jack Scarra.
Well, I'm the person to talk to about poetry, but we'll get onto that one.
So there's a guy called Jack, another great player in that 80s era.
Yeah,
a guy called Jack Scarabellotti, or Jack Scarra.
Yeah.
And Jack Scarra and I shared something in common, and it wasn't rugby talent. He was a very talented player. It was very hairy chests.
Oh, yeah.
So we used to set fire to each other's chest.
As you do. What else are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Jack Scarra last year decided to ride a bike, a bicycle from Queensland, down to Corowa and back into Albury just for old time's sake. And we...
This isn't a motorbike.
No, this is a push bike.
A push bike.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he finished up riding it up to the top of Monument Hill.
Yeah.
And we did a bit of a ring around, and there was a bunch of guys up there with some beers. And,
yeah.
So I'll do the poem. So it rained for most of his trip today when he rode in stiff and sore. But with stubborn pride, he finished his ride of 1,000 miles or more. So when he crossed the line on Monument Hill through our banner of blue and gold, there stood a bunch of old mates with a beer and a joke to welcome him back to the fold. You see, the bonds that are forged in the field of battle, in the ruck and the scrum and the maul, they're stronger than steel to that band of brothers that run with the Gilbert ball. And Scarra was one of the chosen few of that game they play in heaven when we wrested the flag from the Waratahs in the spring of 87. The clash was a torrid encounter, but victors were we at the end. Scarra, old mate, I salute you as a teammate, warrior and friend.
That's sublime. And I've just got to tell you, for the people listening, that was off the top of his head. All right, I can see he was a little bit nervy about doing it, but he cracked that out straight off the top of his head. There's no notes here. Do clubs miss that sort of thing? Does that sort of passion, is that something that clubs could do with?
I think it's there. You look at that 99, that 2000 grand finals. I think the passion's still there.
I remember Bridie in one year wrote the Bible for all the players before a grand final,
where he
assigned biblical roles to everyone
that was
involved. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a lot of time and effort, a lot of thought.
There's some very, very passionate You know, we've had some great players.
So we're from the end of 2000. We're from 2000. You've seen a winning grand final, two winning grand finals again.
Yeah.
Where's your rugby involvement? Where's your Steamers involvement in the last 20 years?
I guess we've been running the gate. God, well, not now, but ran the gate for about 8 years.
So the gate's where you go out and get all the old boys coordinated.
Yeah, like, so I was doing herding that. Chooks. Yeah, herding chooks. Yeah, so I did that for 8 years. And we changed it a little bit. It was getting a bit silly because it was the same three or four guys coming up. And so came to an arrangement where when you get teams like Griffith in, you've got to be there at 12 o'clock.
Because they turn up en masse.
And it's kind of ridiculous because you're there at 11:30 or 12 o'clock, then nothing happens until about 2:45. So it came to the arrangement the last couple of years, look, get you guys organise, get the players to organise that gate at 11 or 12 o'clock. I'll get guys to come down at 2:30.
So what's the average age of the guys on the gate that you've been coordinating? Just roughly,
my age, the guys that were playing in the 80s.
So in there getting into their 60s?
I'm 68, yeah.
So how did they go? I am leading up to something. How did you go with the advent of FPOS at the gate?
That's why I'm not on the gate yet. So I haven't done it for the last.
So when someone waves their Apple Watch at you and says, just charge me, what do you say to them?
I did my last stint on the gate last year.
It's all getting a bit electronic.
It is getting a bit electronic. So I've been on the committee for the last couple of years. And I've said to Tom that when he said he was going to the AGM with a ticket, he was going to the AGM and he was standing for 3 years. He said, well, if you're going to do that, go with a ticket. Surround yourself with people, like-minded people that are going to get the stuff done. And if you do that, I'll come on board for 3 years with
you. There's been a few periods over the last near 50 years where people have brought a ticket to the club.
Yes.
It's always been for change, for the better change. But that involvement of a ticket, of a focused group of people is important.
And look, the club's had some good committees and it's had some bad committees. And that happens in clubs.
But yeah.
We've been fortunate, I think, that for the most part, we've had some great club people. Julianne's, Scotty Fraser.
Gibbo's. Line marking. Linus, the guys that do Smitty, the stuff for nothing. You don't have to ask them. They're just doing it.
McGlone, really passionate people.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. And it's like there's a lot of people as well. We've talked about this before where their time is such that they can't get involved in the club.
Yeah.
So they become sponsors.
Yeah.
And things like Barlow, Alexander and Don, who, they've got other priorities, but they hang in there by being a sponsor for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's an equally valid contribution.
Oh, it is. Don off his own back at the moment, it is, trying to recruit some players in from overseas for us,
That's a hard road, that one. But we hope he's successful.
Yeah.
Do you have any positions in mind?
We're chasing the tight five.
Yeah.
9 and 10.
Great.
Was the brief we got. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see how that pans out.
See ya.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
What do you see for the Steamers for this year coming?
Well, I'll start by saying, and it might be sound controversial, it's not about winning a grand final so when we decided that we were going to go with a ticket,
like you said in 1986 when they came with a ticket,
correct.
You didn't win the grand final, you got into one, and the joy was something else. So.
Yeah. So basically, my background in corporate is if you're going to run an organisation, you need a plan.
Yeah.
You need strategy is an overused word, but strategy is about choice. And it's just as important to decide what you're not going to do as what you are going to do. So the focus for the next few years with the club is about recruitment and coaching, So our recruitment plan in past years is you wait to see what happens in January and you start scratching your, you know. So
this is the difference between an organic approach and a dedicated recruitment approach.
We're having a crack at trying to get posters into the universities.
Yes.
We've got posters into the army. We were trying to get them into the gyms. That's fallen over, but we'll work through that. Yeah. So we want to take a structured approach to cope. Tommy Harrington was passionate about we need to get a quality coach. A paid coach, which you're allowed to do, and we need to get them.
Yeah, that's interesting. You are allowed, because I wasn't sure, but
no, you're allowed. Oh, yeah,
that's you great. Can't but, pay but not players.
Not players. No.
Would you pay players? Do you think we should be able to?
No, I don't think we should at all. I think it'll ruin the grassroots game.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. This is another podcast someday, because I'm at the opposite end of the scale.
Yeah.
Because I think in Albury in particular, we can't compete with the Thunder, with even the rugby league teams, with the bottom grade Aussie rules teams.
Yeah.
And we're not competing with other leagues, other unions who are paying their players. Like, it's really a Siru decision.
Yeah.
But, it's to their
own. Yeah, no, I think...
And there's a lot, I think the majority are like you.
Yeah.
Saying, let's
and
not do it.
It's old school as well. I actually think, I think professional rugby, full stop, has killed the code
This is definitely another podcast.
Yeah, okay.
I can't bring myself to watch the new Eddie Jones special. Breaks my heart.
Coaching and recruitment. The other is women's rugby. The club's got its detractors about women's rugby, but as far as I'm concerned and as far as the committee's concerned, the women's rugby brings a lot into this club.
It should be a high priority.
So we're pushing that.
And same thing again. You're competing with so many other sports that are trying to gather that market.
Yeah.
You know.
The third area is a pathway from the juniors. So we've got one of the strongest junior clubs in the region.
Yeah.
And then we've been losing them because we haven't been able to field a third grade.
So this is quite exciting.
This is the Colts under 20s. Yeah. We're looking for a pathway to keep kids in and get them into third grade,
at least. I think Tom and John have both spoken about it. And it's quite exciting.
Yeah.
Like it could be the making of the club in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
If a lot of those 16, 17-year-olds can get introduced to rugby with some old heads beside them.
Yeah.
No,
I think it's
that'd be great.
Yeah. And the last is we've got to look to the club's finances. The club's on paper quite strong because of its reserves.
Yeah.
But since COVID, profitability has been on a knife edge.
Sponsorship dropped to next to nothing.
Yep.
Because we weren't playing.
Yeah. So we've got some challenges in the finances area, and we've got a plan to address it.
Oh, that's good. I did hear on the grapevine that plan included increasing the price of beer at home games, which... everyone's going to whinge about, but it's still cheap beer.
It's pricey,
and it's going to the club.
Yeah,
it's not like.
I think there's other things we can. I think there's things we can do around fundraising lunches and
stuff like that.
So early days yet. So the
So you're saying we might not see a rise in the price of beer?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Okay, okay.
I think it's. From the sounds of things, it sounds like we're undercharging.
Well, you are if you're buying beer at a freaking pub. You're getting it at the ground is much cheaper.
Yeah.
I can promise you that. So we're just winding up.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Gordon. Now, before we go, we've been asking everyone their top three players.
Of whether I played with them or not.
Yeah, just the three guys.
We
don't mind if you've played with them or you haven't. Like, that's up to you.
I rate Don Cameron as one of the great players in the club.
So we're going to call him 3 points or 1 point? So we're putting them, we are putting them in order.
Oh, are we? Okay. Oh, well, the other one is, Don's probably, in terms of his tactical understanding of the game, one of the best that...
So you have a number one that you think's your top shelf player?
Oh, look, I'd put Mick Alexander.
Oh, really? So yeah. We're going to say Don Cameron at number one with 1 point?
Oh.
It's only because we're going to add this up at the end of the year, so I'll just get your order, sorry.
Yeah. So,
and your best player you've seen?
I think I'll leave Don in the number one spot for a whole bunch of reasons. Then Mick Alexander, just simply because of his try scoring record.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll tell you who else I'll put in there at number three is Brighty.
Nathan Bright.
And I'll tell you why. When we lost that that game...
2012,
where the penalty went the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if House was here at the moment, he would be blaming Brighty.
Yeah,
anyway, unfairly.
Doesn't matter, yeah. We're all entitled to our opinions. Brighty then got up and spoke, congratulated the opposition, and I was standing next to, Mick Taggart.
Yeah, Mick McTaggart.
Mick McTaggart, yep. Who was talking to the Siri president at the time. And I heard him say, that guy is not just an ambassador for his club, he's an ambassador for the code.
Yes.
And I think Brighty's a class act.
You're not alone. Yeah. You're definitely not alone. And Brighty reminds me a lot of... Mike Brearley, the English cricket captain, whose talent is as a player was, he wasn't the best player in the team.
Yeah.
And noodle arms, Nathan, would tell you that straight up.
Yeah.
But his leadership, you've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, his leadership.
Yeah.
And his contribution to the, you know, the club since he's stopped playing hasn't ceased. He does a lot of stuff in the background.
Yeah.
And I've used Brighty as a sounding board for different issues in the draft as well.
So I'm just going to put that in which, so who do we give the 3 points to?
Don.
Yeah. Don, right, yeah. Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah. And two to Mick.
And one to Brighty.
Yeah.
All right. No worries. Anything else you want to add?
No.
Good. That'll good. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
We seem to move through it a bit quicker when House isn't here, so we'll have to keep that in mind.
All right. All right, cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.